position is clear. I'm a commander guy.
Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. How you doing? Thanks for tuning in tonight. I think I might get a call from the boss tonight. We'll see. Plus, we have one moron, will you try saying it, moron sound on the program tonight from the commander guy. Commander guy. Plus, the return of Foxy the Snowman, Tony Snow, to the White House briefing room, now that too much Cappuccino Perino has retired and White House briefings are no longer a congata at work seat, we can understand, once again, every detail of the propaganda and how many times Tony Snow says he doesn't know. And we can, again, be treated to repeated referrals or questions from the White House to the Pentagon. Some things never change. A lot of stuff happening. Is Glenn Beck still working for CNN Headline News? Huh? See, all you people that claim that the Jews have, American Jews have this great power over media, don't you feel a little bit silly? ADL has come out and blistered Glenn Beck's ass, and well, they should, for what he said the other night about the murder of 6 million people was motivated by the same thing that makes Al Gore want to tell us about global warming. So for people to say, well, the Jews control everything, hello? Why is Glenn Beck still on CNN Headline News? Huh? What a pig the guy is. Absolute useless pig. There's a study out. 1 in 4 kids in this country go without health care. 1 in 4 kids go without health care. Now, to Republicans, that's no big deal. If their parents were responsible, they'd have health care. Isn't that how that works? That's what this psychopath Neil Bortz here in Atlanta on Atlanta Talk Radio says. If you can't afford health insurance, don't have kids. Yeah, well, that's perfectly logical, you jerk. What happens if you can afford health care and you have kids and then your job moves to China? Oh, never mind. I don't know what a fourth of the child population is in this country. And what's a child? Is that someone under the age of 13 or somebody under the age of 18? We must have, what, 40 million, 50 million children. There's 300 million people. What would you say? I don't know. Pick a number. 40 million? One out of seven in the country's population is a child? About 1 out of 6, 1 out of 5? I don't know. Pick a number. And then take a fourth of that. What does that wind up with? 20 million, 15 million uninsured children? Oh, this is wonderful. Isn't that nice? Huh? In any other country, that would be called child neglect, wouldn't it? Huh? Oh, I don't know. In some countries, the U.S. government would call it a crime. And a pretext to start making noises about a war or an invasion or an occupation. Well, they can't even take care of their own children. But as our senior correspondent who sent me the story says, as Chris says, when it happens in the U.S., it's shoved down the memory hole and no one looks at it and no one wants to mention it and to hell with it. And, of course, don't forget, it's not just about children. The study doesn't mention the adult population. 1 in 4 children without health care. Oh, my God. I have we have health insurance through our union. And one of the things that's free to me, obviously, the union health and retirement fund pays this, and I pay into the health and retirement fund, as does my employer. That's the way it works. But for us, then, there's something called well baby care, where you take your child in for vaccinations, checkups, height and weight, exams, and it doesn't cost anything to us, except for what we pay into the H&R fund and what our employer pays in. And the reason there's no per-visit charge is because, I guess, people a lot smarter than you and me realize that it makes sense to make sure a child has health care, checkups, good nutrition, proper growth, weight, vision, teeth not rotting out. But you see, it's that sort of thing is limited to people who can afford health insurance through their employer, through their union, on their own, you know. And how many people, 7% of the workforce still is unionized? So is it time yet for universal health care in this country? Is it time yet for single-payer health care where the United States by God government handles the parsing out of the services, as they do in Medicare, as they do with the Veterans Administration? Is it time yet for that? No. We're only 1 in 4 children. We need to get to 1 in 3, or perhaps 1 in 2. Or why insure any of the little boogers at all? You know, I mean, only the wealthy should have health insurance, right? Only the top 10% of Americans. So that would be 1 in 90 should have health insurance. Paul Harvey, this guy is really, I mean, the inside of his head must just be all blown synapses and plaque and spiderwebs. On his news and comment radio show, I think it was yesterday, Paul Harvey, now he's employed by ABC Radio Networks, Paul Harvey said the media, this is a quote, "The media should put a stop to labeling women and children killed in war as civilians." He said, now someone mentioned this last night, now I've got the story. Paul Harvey said, "It was civilians, for goodness sake, who decapitated New York City." Dictionaries define a civilian as one not on active duty in the armed services or not on a police or firefighting force. Paul Harvey disagrees. According to him, quote, "Since the invention of the aerial bomb 5 wars ago, there have been no civilians," end quote. In other words, in this sick bastard's twisted mind, innocent people who are killed in a war are military combatants because they are victims of a military attack. Now, you can go to thinkprogress.org and listen to what this sick son of a bitch had to say. Children and babies who are incinerated because of mortar fire are not civilians. Paul Harvey is on 1,200 radio stations, 400 Armed Forces Network stations that broadcast around the world, 300 newspapers, and in 2005, the psychopath in the White House gave this creep the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the same one he gave to George Tenet. Now, according to thinkprogress.org, this isn't the first time Paul Harvey has wished for more viciousness in American warfighting. In 2005, he said the U.S. should use nuclear weapons in Afghanistan and Iraq. Somebody ought to ask this sour-mashed freak, where in Afghanistan should we use a nuclear weapon? And after recalling the use of atom bombs during World War II, Paul Harvey lamented that, quote, "We sent men with rifles into Afghanistan and Iraq, and we kept our best weapons in their silos," end quote. Jesus God! He then warned of the dangers of civilizing ourselves too much so that we won't use weapons of mass destruction. He said, quote, "We didn't come this far because we're made of sugar candy. Once upon a time, we elbowed our way onto and across this continent by giving smallpox-infected blankets to Native Americans. That was biological warfare, and we used every other weapon we could get our hands on to grab this land from whomever, and we grew prosperous. And yes, we greased the skids with the sweat of slaves. So it goes with most great nation-states, which, feeling guilty about their savage pasts, eventually civilize themselves out of business and wind up invaded and ultimately dominated by the lean, hungry, up-and-coming who are not made of sugar candy." Now, as you probably know, There was some murder in Afghanistan by our forces. And Harvey has to add this. And hear this, please. In western Afghanistan, where NATO forces are involved in some of the deadliest fighting since January, among the 136 dead this morning are suspected Taliban. But there are others, 51 villagers, mostly women and children. Might not the news media put a stop to such pulled punches, wars as this, if we would just desist from categorizing civilians? It was civilians, for goodness sake, who decapitated New York City. Oh, my God. Paul Harvey. You know what the rest of the story is? Here's the rest. And now, the rest of the story. This is one demonic, sick bastard.
Lonely, I'm Mr. Lonely. I have nobody for my own.
Kill 'em all! Kill 'em all!
I'm Mr. Lonely. Wish I had someone.
Past the hour. Regarding one of the sick bastard Paul Harvey's comments. And by the way, do you suppose ABC Radio Networks will get rid of this piece of human waste? Nah, of course not. And CNN will not get rid of the other piece of human waste, Glenn Beck. That's the way it goes. Aerial bombing of a valley in western Afghanistan by the American military has killed at least 42 civilians, mostly women and children, wounded 50 more. That's according to an Afghan government investigation. A provincial council member who visited the bombing independently put the figure at 50 civilians killed, not 42. President Hamid Karzai, our puppet in Afghanistan, the former Unocal oil consultant in California, said at a news conference in Kabul that the Afghan people could no longer tolerate such casualties. He said, quote, 5 years on, it is very difficult for us to continue accepting civilian casualties. It is becoming heavy for us. It is not understandable anymore, end quote. What? Okay. The report that was put together by the Afghan government said 100 houses were destroyed, 1,600 people are now homeless. The report says that some women and children were drowned in the river nearby as they were trying to escape from the firebombing and jumped into the water. The report put together by the Afghan government said this all happened because of a lack of coordination between international forces and our forces. Oh, well, then just tell that to the village elders. It'll be okay. Jesus, you know, it's collateral damage. What do you expect? In fact, in Washington, a Pentagon spokesman, Lieutenant Colonel Jeremy Martin said, quote, we're aware of the allegations. See, they're allegations. No, they're dead children, you son of a bitch. We're aware of the allegations, but we don't have any information through operational channels to confirm the latest incident. We take all measures possible to limit civilian casualties, end quote. Oh, my God. If that doesn't sound Nazi-like, if it doesn't sound like a cold-hearted killer, doesn't it? We're aware of the allegations. What, 42 dead, women and children and stuff? Oh, well, you know, we're aware of it, but we don't have any confirmation through operational channels. You know, nobody from the battlefield has called us up on the American side and said, guess what, there's blood and broken pieces of baby arms all over the road here. Nobody's told us that, you know. So, Jesus, what do you want? You know, these are Afghans talking. A member of the village council was adamant that there had been no Taliban fighters in the area. incredible, isn't it? Huh? It's pretty incredible. Bush has now decided on the new definition of success in Iraq is a manageable level of violence. You know, that came out yesterday. You heard that. Maybe you've heard that definition somewhere before. Do you recall? Do you remember? Let me give you a little nudge here. During the 2004 election, Senator John Kerry explained that success against terrorism will occur when terrorist acts, such as those in Iraq, are reduced to a level that, quote, they're a nuisance, end quote. Kerry explained that gains can be made against terrorism when it isn't threatening people's lives every day, and fundamentally it's something that you continue to fight, but it's not threatening the fabric of your life, end quote. Do you recall how John Kerry was derided for saying that? Bush said, quote, just this weekend, this is back in October of 2004, Bush said, just this weekend we saw new evidence that the senator, Kerry, fundamentally misunderstands the war against terror. Our goal is not to reduce terror to some acceptable level of nuisance. Our goal is to defeat terror by staying on the offensive, destroying the networks, and spreading freedom and liberty. And Giuliani had something to say about it, and so did Cheney, and I'll give that to you when we come back. But if it sounded familiar about an acceptable level of violence, maybe that's because you have heard it before.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
26 before the hour. So yesterday Bush decides, or he, and I think we'll have the sound for you. He's addressing a group of people representing the Associated General Contractors of America, and that's where he makes a statement that success in Iraq will consist of a reduced level of violence. John Kerry suggested that, and he was derided. Now, I gave you what the quote from Bush. He more or less says Senator Kerry fundamentally misunderstands the war against terror. Dick Cheney at the time, October 11th in 2004, said, quote, nor can we think of our goal in this war in the way Senator Kerry described it yesterday in the New York Times. He said, we have to get back to the place where terrorism is a nuisance, sort of like. And these are his comparisons, sort of like gambling and prostitution. This is naive and dangerous, end quote. Giuliani said, same month, same year, October 2004, in a conference call with reporters arranged by the Bush campaign, Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York, mocked Mr. Kerry for comparing terrorism to gambling and prostitution. Quote, the idea that you can have an acceptable level of terrorism is frightening, Mr. Giuliani said. And what did the chimp have to say yesterday? Here it is exactly. Either we'll succeed or we won't succeed. There's a winning attitude. And the definition of success, as I described, is sectarian violence down. Success is not no violence. There are parts of our own country that have got a certain level of violence to it. But success is a level of violence where the people feel comfortable about living their daily lives, and that's what we're trying to achieve. Oh, my God. So, Mr. and Ms. America, your sons and daughters and husbands and moms and dads who are being butchered, and I'm only talking about the Americans, in Bush's war, and you've had some doubts lately as to what your family member is giving his or her life for, well, there you have it. Now it's to reduce violence in Iraq to an acceptable level. From the halls of Montezuma, indeed. Oh, my God. It's about 23 before the hour. Well, look who's here. My boss has phoned in. Hi, Anita.
Hey, Malloy. How are you?
You're not calling in to fire me, right?
No. Are you serious? Oh. You're a hit. You're a star. You're the best there is.
Yeah, thanks, thanks, Mrs. Drobny. I certainly appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Are you serious? Did you see how big of a hit you were at our party?
Hey, that was a lot of fun.
Man.
We had a good time out there with Stephanie Miller and Bill Press and Tom Hartman who else? Jeff Farias.
Yeah.
And,
there was a lot of talent there.
And your gorgeous daughter and
yes.
And a thousand, my God, there must have been over 1,000 people packed it. That was a lot of fun. We had a good time.
It was a packed house. They had a space for 1,200 people, and that was it, or maybe even a few.
It
more
was
people.
So crowded. I had to step outside just to change my mind. Oh, God, you're easy. Oh, my God, you're easy.
I know. That's what all the men say.
Ah! All right, now, why are you calling, Anita? I always get nervous when the boss or the boss's husband calls in. What's up?
Well, I just want to thank you and all the listeners of Nova M Radio and of your program to just say thank you for supporting our network so beautifully.
Well, that's nice. That's
the Founders Club, they've just been out there for you, Mike. They just love you. Get so many emails and so much wonderful information about how happy they are that we have got you in our family and better us than anyone else.
Well, I'll tell you, having spent about 25 years off and on in radio, I really do think that Nova M is like a home. That's how it's become to me. You and Shelley, who started Air America, and then you started Nova M. The thing that makes working here, and I think people pick up on this, not just people who work here, but people who listen. You guys didn't come out of the cauldron of jealousy and greed and hate and contempt that is normal radio, and especially talk radio. You guys came out of an entirely different milieu, and I think it shows in how you run this network. So,
thank you.
By the way, where are we now with the 5,000 founding members?
Well, we're getting up there. We're close to 1,300 or 1,400, but we need to have a lot of more folks come in and get involved. We are spreading our wings. We're going into other cities. Folks have called us, communities, very prominent people in the various areas. And Shelley and I have been going out. We've been to Boston. We've been to Dallas. There's a huge demand. You know, Malloy, once you have progressive talk, mm-hmm. once you have the ability to hear someone talking the truth, and you have the ability to summon, not tell you that you're crazy,
right,
that there's only one way to think and this is it and forget everything else. Once you get that into your area and you lose it, you go nuts.
Yeah, that's true. That happened here in Atlanta. When I worked for Air America, we had a station here, 1690, on the dial. And it was bought, and all the Air America programming was canceled. It leaves a void. I know I've gotten emails from people in Madison for a while there, people in San Diego, people in Boston, people in Minneapolis who said, I just can't, you know, it's hard to deal without liberal or progressive talk.
Yeah, and that's it. And in order for us to be able to move out into all these various areas and more to come, we need the help and the support of the Founders Club. We need to be able to, you know, Shelley and I, we could just do so much. But we've decided that if the community wants us in there and if people want to get progressive talk back into their area, then they have to participate. Because without community effort, without founders, without people that are from the progressive movements, without people who we have a grassroots affinity for, it's going to come to a standstill.
Yeah,
and we can't allow that to happen.
Yeah, and I've tried to get that idea out, not just on the program, but when I talk to people, a lot of people say, well, you know, Sean Hannity doesn't have a Founders Club. And I say, well, Sean Hannity's content, I believe you have to subscribe to. You certainly have to with Rush Limbaugh. But right-wing, Crazed Radio is backed by massive funding by all sorts of organizations, think tanks, corporate money, sleaze balls, slush funds. And anytime somebody wants to put out progressive or liberal talk, it usually requires going to the community and saying, okay, look, you need to support this. You need to support this. And I know people probably get tired of it, but that's the reality in broadcast in America, 2007. It just is.
It's very similar to this upcoming election. You know, if it wasn't for all the progressive talk that we have on right now, as limited as it is, the 2006 election would have turned out differently.
Oh, I agree.
People like you and with all the other talent that we have in this and progressive industry, it helped turn that.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Oh, I know so.
Yeah.
And in 2008, if you don't think that we're going to have to win by a landslide to be able to be in the race, then we're not thinking straight.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I've said before on this program, when I got fired from Air America, there were 20,000 people that signed an online petition, which I really appreciated, but it went over like a pork chop at a bar mitzvah. It's going to go nowhere with Air America, but it was a lot of support. And I've asked, I've said, where's some of that support over here to Nova M to become a founding member, which is not a charitable contribution. You do get something for that. And I hope it picks up. I really do. And I know people don't like to hear that, but damn it, that's just the way it is.
It's the way it is. And we're doing so much with all the members that have joined Nova M. We have got so much breaking news that's going to be coming out within the next month that everybody will be so proud of what we've done.
Nova
with
M,
the resources we have.
You've got breaking news coming out for Nova M.
Yes. Oh, lots of goody stuff.
I didn't get the memo.
No memo yet.
Oh, it's secret.
Of course it's a secret. I have to abide by confidentiality agreements.
That's oh, God.
Yes.
I'm afraid to ask.
You'll be so happy.
Well, that's what I mean. I can't wait. I can't wait to see how the network grows. Hey, listen, we got a break coming up here. Thanks a lot for checking. Anita, I always enjoy talking to you, especially in person, and thanks for the support here, asking folks to get on board with Nova M, because we do need it, and I hope it happens.
Me too. Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, Anita, thanks.
Have a good show.
Tell Shelley I said
I'm not going to pass that on.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye.
Goodbye. Oh, I can't stand it when the boss calls. NovaMradio.com, that's what Anita's talking about. This fledgling little network has got a great future. I really believe it, or I wouldn't be here. But it does take some support. So go to NovaMradio.com, check out the Founders Club, check out what it is that the Drobnys are trying to do here. These are not rich people who have put this together. These are people who are dedicated to the proposition that progressive or liberal talk should be available, and it should be available across the country. You can help make it happen. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network.
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 10 before the hour. It's an email from Rice about Afghanistan. Hey, Mike, I'm a Neo Malloy, and I like the things I hear. My buddy says we must have some telepathic link. Nuking Afghanistan is not a practical option. It would only contaminate the poppy fields. Oh, well, there's always Asia or Humboldt. Okay. From John about Paul Harvey. Mike, don't be too hard on the old guy. His three remaining brain cells have been totally overcome by neurofibrillary plaques and tangles. Isn't it wonderful that such a demented person can have access to public fora? Is that the plural of forums? I think it is. This is from Dean in Connecticut. Mike and Kathy, right after John Lennon was killed, Paul Harvey claimed that it was silly to want more effective gun control laws. His rationale was that at 40, John Lennon had outlived several of his contemporaries, such as Van Morrison, Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix, and Janis Joplin. So it turns out, in Paul Harvey's demented mind, the ex-Beatle was kind of lucky that no one shot him to death sooner. Paul Harvey is living proof that abortion not only needs to be legal, but retroactive. I can't understand the kind of stuff like that comes out of a broadcaster's mouth, like Paul Harvey. I don't know. Okay, Jennifer emails in, the subject line, okay, you got me. Jennifer writes, I'm fighting with PayPal to join the Founders Club despite the fact I don't have $100 to throw around at 3 weeks before my wedding. Hey, congratulations, Jennifer. Oh, well, I'll have to throw a bit of that money into the Malloy Fund instead of my nest egg. What the heck? Nest eggs won't mean anything if the Republicans keep ruining our economy, right? Happy to hopefully be a member of the club soon. It's from Jennifer in D.C. P.S. Give an on-air shout-out to Ralps and the gang over at the Democratic Underground thread from The Witch, Stuck at Work, if you have a chance. Okay, just did. What else have we got? I'm sure most of you are familiar with Ray McGovern. He served in the CIA for 27 years and has become a severe critic of how the invasion and occupation of Iraq was force-fed into one of the body orifices of the American political body politic. He was on the MSNBC's Tucker Carlson show the other day. And according to rawstory.com, which is where I got this, a former CIA analyst claims that falsified documents which were meant to show that Iraq's Saddam Hussein regime had been trying to procure yellowcake uranium from Niger can be traced back to Vice President Dick Cheney. Appearing on MSNBC's Tucker Carlson show, Ray McGovern, who served in the CIA for 27 years, said, quote, the forged memo leads right back to the doorstep of the Vice President of the United States, end quote. According to McGovern, former CIA Director George Tenet told his so-called coterie of malleable managers at the CIA to create a national intelligence estimate, quote, to the terms of reference of Dick Cheney's speech of August 26, 2002, where Dick Cheney said for the first time Saddam Hussein could have a nuclear weapon in a year. He's got all kinds of chemical. He's got all kinds of biological weapons, end quote. God, I hate these people. McGovern, who at one time chaired National Intelligence Estimates and prepared the president's daily brief, also claimed to have evidence that the memo leads back to Cheney. But he would not say what it was, except that the names of the people involved were, quote, in the public domain, end quote. In an op-ed posted at BuzzFlash, McGovern argues, quote, if any good can come out of the intelligence policy debacle regarding Iraq, it would be the clear lesson that intelligence crafted to dovetail with the predilections of policymakers can bring disaster. The role, McGovern goes on to write, the role that Tenet, McLaughlin, and their small coterie of malleable managers played as willing accomplices in the corruption of intelligence has made a mockery of the verse chiseled into the marble at the entrance to CIA headquarters, which reads, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. McGovern also calls George Tenet a pathetic figure who is, quote, trying to justify himself for unjustifiable activity, end quote. And for everybody who saw the Washington Post article that said the Democrats are backing down on the Iraq timetable for withdrawal of our troops, the Washington Post front page story today said, quote, the President Bush and congressional leaders began negotiating a second war funding bill yesterday with Democrats offering the first major concession, an agreement to drop their demand for a timeline to bring troops home from Iraq. Now, that story has been out there all day, but according to Greg Sargent at Talking Points Memo, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid's offices both deny the story and say they have not backed down. Pelosi just went before, I don't know when he wrote this, but Greg Sargent writes, Pelosi just went before the Democratic caucus and informed them that today's story is false. The Washington Post is standing by the story, and lead writer of the Post piece, Jonathan Wiseman, told me that leadership aides told him that the withdrawal language, getting our troops out of there, had to go. But the Post story goes further than that, saying explicitly that Democrats have already, quote, backed down, end quote, and offered the concession of removing the withdrawal language. Those aren't the same thing. Why report the Democrats have already caved in the negotiations if they haven't yet? I just emailed a Pelosi aide to ask whether the story was true. Here's the reply, quote, not true. Speaker just told members of the Democratic caucus that the story is totally untrue. We are still deciding what provisions the new bill will include. End quote. Meanwhile, a source in Harry Reid's office tells me the following, quote, no decisions have been made on this yet. No options have been ruled in or out. End quote. It's also worth noting that the New York Times story on this today didn't say that the Democrats have officially offered this concession either. So what happened here? That's a good question. Although the Washington Post, at least in its op-ed pieces and editorials, has become decidedly pro-war and pro-Bush, so I don't know, go figure. It'll be curious to see what happens next. So if you read that Washington Post story this morning, both Reid and Pelosi are totally denying it. Welcome back, 6:30 past the hour. You know, I was thinking during the break, that was nice of Anita Drobny to call in here. She certainly doesn't have to do that. And I just can't imagine any place else I've ever worked where the head of the company would call in and say, hey, you're doing a good job.
Ah!
I wish everybody could know the Drobnys. They're just decent people, that's all. What can I add? They're decent people. A couple of emails here. I'm sure you've heard on the news today that this Bush thug is threatening another veto, this time on a federal hate crimes law. The House voted today to add gender and sexual orientation to the categories covered by this federal hate crimes law. What is it about right-wingers that they don't acknowledge? They refuse to acknowledge that people can be beat up or murdered or run down or shot simply because of their sexual orientation or their gender. How many women have to be beaten for sport before they get it? How many gay folk have to have their heads crushed in before these right-wing sons of bitches get it? You know, Christopher Hitchens, with whom I've had some strong disagreements, has a new book out entitled God Is Not Great. Another religious debunker has taken center stage. And as a matter of fact, he was on Lou Dobbs' program tonight, and Lou Dobbs endorsed the book. And I don't know if Lou Dobbs knows what he was endorsing, but Hitchens, who is, I think, probably more articulate in his kind of intellectual way than a lot of the pro-atheism books that are out there right now, or the authors are, Hitchens just rips religion to pieces and puts it where it belongs, all religions. And he doesn't mince words on the Eastern religions. I tend to say, well, those are maybe a little bit more spiritual oriented, but they're not. And Hitchens is right. But what is it about religious people? Have you ever noticed that? And the only ones I can address directly are Christians, Jews, and Muslims, who altogether are just vile when it comes to a person's sexual orientation, if it is not absolutely heterosexual. And the hypocrisy there is mind-boggling. It is absolutely mind-boggling. But the religious nutballs who control the Republican Party have decided that, no, we don't want gays to be included, sexual orientation to be included in a category covered by federal hate crimes law. We just don't want it. The House Majority Leader, Steny Hoyer of Maryland, said, quote, "This is an important vote of conscience, of a statement of what America is, a society that understands that we accept differences." The vote came after fierce lobbying from civil rights groups who have been pushing for years for added protections against hate crimes, and lobbying by so-called social conservatives. They're not. They're social demons who say the bill threatens the right to express moral opposition to homosexuality, which is absolutely not true. It does nothing of the sort. It has nothing to do with what you say. It has to do with how you act. Ah, these rat bastards. Lamar Smith of Texas, the top Republican on the Judiciary Committee, said, quote, "Our criminal justice system has been built on the idea of equal justice for all. Under this bill, justice will no longer be equal, but depend on the race, sex, sexual orientation, disability, or status of the victim." How did these cretins get elected? I guess it's from making statements like that. Everyone is protected from violence. But if violence, I wonder how Lamar Smith would feel if there was a group going around the country deciding that the only people they're going to shoot at would be representatives from Texas. Well, there is a law that protects Lamar Smith, that gives him special protection because he is a member of the United States House of Representatives. You sick bastard. Now, a lot of this comes from James Dobson, the founder of Focus on the Family. Dobson focuses on your crotch. He doesn't focus on your family. He doesn't give a damn about your family. But he does care about your crotch, and he cares about your gonads and your ovaries. Oh, and your womb. This guy is a selective focuser. He warned that the true intent of this bill was, quote, "to muzzle people of faith who dare to express their moral and biblical concerns about homosexuality," end quote. He told his broadcast listeners, I guess today, if you read the Bible in a certain way, then you may be guilty of committing a thought crime. You evil, nasty old man. The Judiciary Committee Chairman John Conyers says it does not impinge on public speech or writing in any way. If you want to write about how you hate queers, go ahead. If you want to write about how you hate women, go ahead. If you want to write about how you hate blacks and gypsies and Jews and Catholics and liberal talk show hosts, go ahead! But there should be civil rights protection for groups that are targeted. Hate crimes are up, not down. Oh, God. I don't know, Kathy. Kathy's looking at me like, oh, my God, don't you ever give it up. No, I don't. And you know why I don't. Jesus. I hate religion. Oh, my God, I hate it. Oh, my God, I hate it. That's where all of this comes from. Every single putrid drop of this bigotry, that's where it comes from. That's where racism and slavery, the justification for slavery came from. Because the Bible says a slave is supposed to honor and respect his master. From J.R. in Southern Indiana. Mike, I'm sure you've heard my two. I'm sure you've already heard my two points, but I hope you will mention them tonight. First, as I believe you told us before, Barack has had threats made against him, Barack Obama, and now has Secret Service protection. Personally, I would be worried that his so-called protection will knock him off, as they did to RFK. I don't know that much about the assassination of Robert Kennedy, except what I read in the paper. Second, the cowardly shrub has said he will veto the new hate crimes law. So it's open season on gays. I will bet that there will be at least two major killings of gay folk in the near future as soon as this idiot vetoes this law. Yeah, there's always somebody out there, or 10 somebodies, or 100 somebodies, who say that they are operating in the will and the aura and the mystique of Jesus or Moses or Muhammad to take out as many gay folk as they possibly can. I hate religion. I hate it. It has done nothing but corrupt this entire planet for 10,000 years. I just despise it. I just despise it. Chuckle Nuts. You want to do Chuckle Nuts right now? All right, let's do them real quick. This is from the speech he gave yesterday to the Associated General Contractors of America. You know, I'm sort of still fuming, and so is Kathy, that the Rovian machine conveniently erased much of what Raisin Brain said yesterday, his less eloquent moments during his Q&A with the general contractors. Remember, this dumb bastard can't talk unless he's scripted, and even then he screws it up. Amazingly, the print record of what he actually said, including a repeat of the word internets, is still up on the WhiteHouse.gov official site, but the audio and video link skips a couple of paragraphs entirely. That's how dumb these half-wits are. The ones that try to keep his image from going right into the crapper. But I guess they figure, they don't want it to wind up on YouTube, and if you want to quote it, it's not as effective. Okay, but you can watch it for yourself. Just go to WhiteHouse.gov and you'll see it. But they didn't change the part where Manor Monkey talked about acceptable levels of violence in Iraq. And like I mentioned earlier, remember how the right wing in this country tore John Kerry a new one in 2004 when he suggested that the best that might be hoped for was a reduction in violence. Terrorism is not something you can eliminate by definition, but it's a great way to get your ass and your party's ass elected, because we Americans are essentially cowards. We are terrified. That's because we are so goddamn guilty of everything that we've been accused of. And rather than face the guilt and say, okay, I'm going to stop the bigotry, I'm going to stop assassinating people, I'm going to stop overthrowing governments, I'm going to stop demonizing gays, I'm going to stop using the N-word. No, we can't do that. We just huddle down in our paranoia and say, pass the ammunition, the sons of bitches are coming. They're going to get your daughter. They're going to get your son. But I digress. The audience member said, I'd like to know, Mr. Bush, like a lot of other people in the room, we have family members. We have family members who are actively involved in the security of this country in various ways. From them, we've received positive information that we consider credible, who say about the success and the good things that are happening as a result of us being in Iraq.
Either we'll succeed or we won't succeed. And the definition of success, as I described, is, sectarian violence down. Success is not no violence. There are parts of our own country that, have got, a certain level of violence to it.
Oh my
but
God.
Success is a level of violence where the people feel comfortable about living their daily lives.
Jesus Christ.
And that's what we're trying to achieve. I'm asked all the time about strategies. We put in more troops to get to a position where we can be in some other place. The question is, who ought to make that decision? The Congress or the commanders? And as you know, my position is clear. I'm a commander guy.
Jesus God. I'm a commander guy. You sick little rat punk, you. Oh, Jesus. Go sign some pro-gay bashing legislation. That'll occupy you tomorrow, right, George? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Here we go now. I go anywhere to fight for all, be it olive, safflower, crude. For cooking, for cars, take a rocket to the stars for a back rub, romantic rendezvous. In your engine, on your face, or almost any place, a little dab of oil will get you through. Oh, I go anywhere to fight for all, to lubricate the red, white, and blue.
For a place to attack, why not attack Iraq? They've got coconut and palm oil and crude. They invaded Kuwait, so let's not hesitate. We can blow up a country or two. If it's oil or it's grease, we don't have time for peace. Waging war is what we want to do. Oh, I go anywhere to fight.
times I'm happy. You know, this is... But wars are not a time of joy. These aren't joyous times.
Oh. 23 past the hour. Let's see if we can squeeze in a phone call here before the next break, because we went over there. AJ, the Music Factory, is calling from the Catskills in Greater New York. Hey, AJ, how you doing?
Hey, handsome. How's it going tonight?
It's just moving along at leaps and bounds.
Good. Listen, I got a problem I want you to help me out with.
Sure.
I've been using the handle Music Factory since I was 12 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking of changing it. I want to run this by you.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. How about this? The Music Guy.
The Music Guy?
Yeah.
Nah. The Commander Guy has already been taken.
The Musicker Guy?
The Musicker. Now, okay, there you go.
Hey, I'm
the Musicker. iMusic. Yeah, change it into a verb.
I can't friggin' stand it anymore, Mike. I can't stand it. I'm going to go nuts. I really do think I'm going to go nuts.
The Music Guy. You know, when you come to that's got kind of a nice little banal half-ass feel to it. It's kind of like the Commander Guy. Can you imagine somebody who could put this country at war and who's responsible for over 500,000 deaths and God knows how many injuries when you take everything into account, calling himself the Commander Guy?
Listen, I really do think that I've been thinking this for a long time, but the stuff like the Commander Guy and also the hate crimes bill, to try and stay on topic as much as possible, all this kind of madness. I mean, stuff that it's no longer policy disagreements where you say, I don't agree with that. It's just flipping nuts. I really think we're witnessing, you don't get to see this often, we're witnessing the public meltdown of a president, of a world leader as such.
You know what
I mean?
Yeah.
I don't remember ever having, I'm 45 years old, I've never seen anything like this before.
Neither have I.
I'm sorry?
Kathy has a question for you.
Well, I was just going to, AJ, I was just going to say, hey, if you can't be the Musicker Guy, do you want to be War Czar? Because I understand that there's still a position open.
You can be the War Czar.
You can be War Czar Guy. Because we don't have, we got the law guy.
They're looking for a War Czar guy, you know.
Yeah. Do I have the requisite idiocy for something like that, I wonder? I don't know.
Probably not.
I don't know. But thanks, Kathy, for passing that along. It's something for me to chew on.
Hey, ask your friends. You know,
I mean,
the position's open.
War Czar.
I just attended a little, you were talking about protest last, impeachment day. And we had an impeachment day that had all of about 18 people over here in Oneonta, New York. But I'll tell you something, they were all heart. And people were honking and waving and right here in rural New York.
That's good. I think it's spreading. AJ, the Music Factory, thanks for checking in, pal.
Mike, peace. Have a good vacation.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
So long. Bye.
We'll be back after the break. Truth Seeker, stay with us.
That's me. That's me in the spotlight, losing my religion, trying to keep up with you, and I don't know if I can do it. Oh no, I've said too much. I haven't said.
Nighty night, Truth Seekers. Time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer. More Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. You know, thinking about what AJ, the Music Factory, is talking about and some of the things that have occurred here as a result of the governing by the Bush crime family. Bush and now the Republican Party and everybody associated with Bush have literally, they all have become carriers of mental illness in the same way that the legendary and probably apocryphal Typhoid Mary operated in, was it New York, city of New York, a couple of generations ago, and spread that disease amongst the general population. Do you realize that in order to accept what the Republican Party says is reality, or what the Bush crime family says is reality, whether it's about regulatory agencies in this country, or the job picture for middle-class Americans, or what's going on in Iraq, I don't care what the issue is, in order to accept it as truth, you have got to render yourself temporarily mentally ill. You have to. You cannot otherwise accept what is being said by these people if your brain is not, if your mind is not off balance, off kilter. And then stop and think how sick, mentally sick, the people in media have to be in order to keep propelling this propaganda into the general population. Think of a Sean Hannity or a Rush Limbaugh or a Michael Wiener, whatever the hell his name is, Savage, I'm a Savage, a Bill O'Reilly, any of these people. They are clearly mentally ill. They have to be. When you say a success in Iraq is occurring, while at the same time hundreds upon hundreds of people are being blown to pieces, you've got to be mad to some degree to accept that. It's astonishing. Every single right-wing radio talk show host is also a perpetrator, a carrier of mental illness. This is why, for example, Fox News Channel, another study that shows that the longer people listen to the so-called news at Fox News Channel, the more misinformed they become. These are objective studies. This is not done by some liberal radio network. This is done by, what was it, John Hopkins? I have no idea who did it, but it was a legitimate study based on how people respond and answer simple questions. People who say, yeah, I get most of my news from Fox News. They become more and more and more infected with this mental illness. We are living in an asylum. Now, at this point, I think the majority of the people here are not insane, but that difference between majority and minority is starting to erode just enough. When you have members of the House who say that a hate crimes bill that specifically says if you target certain groups for your violence, there will be additional penalties, that somehow that in impacts on free speech. When you have a so-called psychologist and religious leader like this phony-ass Dr. James Dobson saying that if this bill passes and you read the Bible a certain way, you'll be guilty of a thought crime, that's not madness? That's not insanity? And these religious nutballs who tune in, I listen to Dobson every once in a while when I'm on the road. I don't think you can get him here in Atlanta. Maybe you can. I have no idea. But every once in a while, I'm on a long drive. I'll listen to Dobson's Focus on the Family. I have never heard such a collection of mental illnesses. If there are four or five people guests on his program, Jesus Christ, it's like schizophrenia sparring with paranoia, which is sparring with a borderline personality disorder, which is sparring with kleptomania. I mean, I've never heard anything like it. And what does Dobson claim? 10 million listeners? And the pig man, when Limbaugh sits out there and talks this madness, this insanity, jeez.
In the year 2000, Team Bush took over the Republican Party and laid out its promises to the American people. The following pledges and claims are taken directly from the 2000 Republican presidential platform. Should we laugh or should we cry at promises made by an administration that has ruled through deception, endless war, politicization, did I say that right, of intelligence and the Justice Department, outing CIA officers and the like? This is what the Republican Party's platform stated in the year 2000. regarding honest government. Trust, pride, and respect. We pledge to restore these qualities to the way Americans view their government. Trust, pride, and respect. Keeping intelligence free of politics. Nor should the intelligence community be made the scapegoat for political misjudgments. A Republican administration working with the Congress will respect the needs and quiet sacrifices of these public servants as it strengthens America's intelligence and counterintelligence capabilities. Yes, we will keep intelligence free of politics. Diplomacy and maintaining allies. The arrogance, inconsistency, and unreliability of the Clinton administration's diplomacy have undermined American alliances, alienated friends, and emboldened our adversaries. Endless military missions, exit strategies, and troop readiness. The current administration, the Clintons, have casually sent American armed forces on dozens of missions without clear goals, recognizable objectives, favorable rules of engagement, or defined exit strategies. Sending our military on vague, aimless, and endless missions rapidly saps morale. Even the highest morale is eventually undermined by back-to-back deployments, poor pay, shortage of spare parts and equipment, inadequate training, and rapidly declining readiness. When it comes to military health, the Clinton administration is not providing an adequate military health care system. Restoring the rule of law and the Justice Department. The rule of law, the very foundation for a free society, has been under assault, not only by criminals from the ground up, but also from the Clinton administration from the top down. An administration that lives by evasion, cover-up, stonewalling, and duplicity has given us a totally discredited Department of Justice. The credibility of those who now manage the nation's top law enforcement agency is tragically eroded. We are fortunate to have its dedicated career workforce, especially its criminal prosecutors, who have faced the unprecedented politicization of decisions regarding both personnel and investigations. Gas prices, which were then $1.55 a gallon. Today, gas prices have skyrocketed. And oil imports are at all-time highs. By any reasonable standard, the Department of Energy has utterly failed in its mission to safeguard America's energy security. Jesus God. This is from Progressive Democrats of America. It's a grassroots group that works both inside the Democratic Party and outside the Democratic Party and movements for peace and justice. You can get all this. Go to P, that's Paul, D, like David, America, pdamerica.org, pdamerica.org. PDA's advisory board includes six members of Congress and leaders such as Tom Hayden, Cindy Sheehan, Medea Benjamin, and Reverend Lennox Yearwood. PDAmerica.org. Can you believe that, huh? Every single thing that has come from every single Republican's mouth in the past 6 years has been a complete and total lie. Everything. Everything. They need to be either completely removed from office or relegated to such minority status that these Republicans no longer can corrupt and destroy and mentally abuse and run this country into just a brick wall of mental degeneracy. They need to be removed or reduced to the point where maybe there's 100 members of the Republican Party left in the House, maybe 20 left in the Senate. They need to be gotten rid of, legally and peacefully, of course. They're making the people of this country insane.
Think about it. Totally insane. And the proof, as your grandma used to say, is in the pudding. Listen, any day, any time, anywhere across the dial to a right-wing psychopath jabbering and gibbering on this station and that station and this network and that network, and listen for 2 or 3 minutes and then quickly stop, because remember, when you peer into the abyss peers into you. Tony Snow's comments coming up. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
My neck is red, my collar blue. I like it that way. I don't hear liberals talking to me. I don't see things their way. Yeah, I'm on the right side. I'm on the right side. The only side.
Pundits must walk us. Jess and Drew can't help ya. Drew Bucks it. Decide to wait.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
Come on, let's roll. Yeah, we'll have we've got 2 or 3 Tony Snow cuts from today that we'll have for you after the top of the hour. This is from Kate regarding the subject line. Says hate crimes. Mike, you asked last week how come more women don't call the program. I've been thinking about that question since then. Just suppose it is because we are getting close to the edge. Terrorist pipe bombs in Austin. This hate crimes bill. Our babies being blown into red mist or reduced to violent vegetables. Religious maniacs still trying to control our bodies. Need you ask why we don't call in? Ian would be on the dump button before I got the first paragraph out. Well, I can certainly appreciate that. Kate, keeping it lit, but the fuse is getting short. Yeah, I know. Oh, God. Let's go to the phones here. Norm is calling from Phoenix. Norm, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Norm.
First of all, don't take this wrong, but I wanted to touch briefly on your crotch comment. you know, focus on the family jewels. I mean, that's what this group ought to be called for sure. But, you know, it's so depressing. You know, I commiserate with you. I feel the same way to see the insanity that's just across the land. And you know, you talk about the flying monkeys sometimes. I see also the people sleeping in the poppy field part of the Wizard of Oz. You know, and I feel like a scarecrow sometimes. I think you're a scarecrow too, trying to wake people up, trying to go, come on, there's a danger. You just can't keep sleeping here. You got to get up and move.
Yeah.
And what we have is a nation where the value of thinking has been devalued. Because if you think about all these people going for faith, what is faith? But it's turning off your brain and saying, I'm not going to really think about this. I'm just going to believe it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting because at the Air America or the Nova M birthday party, I talked to somebody and I said, you know, the Republicans are really good at getting people to feel instead of think. Like, how does it feel, you know, make you feel when you think about an abortion? How does it make you feel when you think about those gays living their lifestyle? You know, that's their appeal. And this guy said to me, who is John Galt?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what he was talking about, and he was talking about Atlas Shrugged.
Right.
And I would urge everybody to read that book. I mean, forget the idea of the noble industrialist. You know, it gets a little wacky, some of her political thinking. But that novel by Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged, the idea of a power structure getting people to just not think and just, you know, truth becomes just, it's just not even there. And that's what's happening here, and it's just the feeling of frustration. I share it too. It's like, what does it take to get through to people? What is it? I don't know what it's going to take. And
I don't either.
You know, you just really kind of want to run away at some point. But it's like, that's what they want us to do. They want us to give up. You know, they want us to just throw in the towel and then they'll have the whole thing for themselves.
Well, it wasn't Ayn Rand, but it was Richard Bach who did say in one of the Siegel books, he said, there is no problem so big it can't be run away from.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's the feeling I get. I mean, so they want us to run away. So what? You know, if this country turns into the seething cesspool of religious fanatics, homophobes, militia types, immigrant haters, and this whole swirling mass of degenerate right-wingers, who in the hell wants to be here? I mean, seriously.
I hear you, but it's like, you know, that's kind of the conflict. It's like to advocate that, like, I don't want to give that up. You know, these... And what enrages me is if people take their hatred about gays and they hide behind God.
Yeah.
They wash their hands. Oh, it's not me. God says it's wrong.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they take their hatred of Mexicans now and they say, well, it's about the law. You've got to follow the law, and they've broken the law. And so now they're hiding behind that.
Damn.
And it's just, I'd feel even better if they'd just be upfront about their hatred and you could deal with it. I don't want to give up, but it just seems like with every passing year, and I think part of the problem is the baby boom generation with the religion thing, because you've got these people moving into the cramming for final exam mode, and you know, and all of a sudden everyone's so proud. The guys on TV, the talking heads, and everyone is so proud of their faith. It's like, look at me, I've got faith. I've turned off my brain. I've got faith.
Yeah.
Pat me on the head.
Yeah,
God
really
loves me, and it's just sickening.
I hear you. Norm, thanks, pal. I appreciate it. Always good to hear from you. Take care, okay?
You too, Mike.
All right. I don't know if you watched any of the Republican presentation tonight of the 10 or 12, however many it is, possible candidates or candidates for Republican Party nomination. But MSNBC hosted that one. And... Toward the end of the first debate for this 2008 presidential election Republican Party debate, MSNBC host Chris Matthews, a guy who, Jesus, he gave the candidates a chance to sound off on why they believe Senator Hillary Clinton was unfit to be president. You know, this almost makes me want to support her. Can you imagine this Tweety Bird, we used to call him, Chris Matthews, don't forget, got his start in television, jumping all over Bill Clinton, when he was accused of getting a little, very little, from Monica Lewinsky. But one of the, I don't know who it was, maybe it was Romney, Mitt Romney, who, when Chris Matthews asked that, said, you know, are you kidding? This is how degenerate it's become by these carriers of mental illness, like Chris Matthews and these Republicans. And to get these 10 candidates up on stage, all of whom, every last one of them, is a cowardly son of a bitch who thinks with the mind of somebody sometime in the Dark Ages, sometime around the 7th or 8th century, every single one of these neo-religious freakoids that are standing up there, and to ask them to toss a chunk of red meat in front of them, which is what Hillary Clinton is to these guys. She is, always has been, because they're terrified Hillary is going to slip into their room at night and cut their testicles off. That's why they fear Hillary. They don't fear Hillary for any reason other than this misogynistic, sick mindset that every single conservative and or Republican male carries around between his ears. They are terrified of her. They are terrified of Pelosi. They are terrified of women in general. And if Hillary just didn't have the positions she has, I would support her. Well, I can support her with her scissors, though, couldn't I, huh? Go get them, Hillary! Welcome back. About 7 past the hour, this is part of the program where I remind you to, we're going to have some fun in October. October what? 7th? Is that when it is? Nova M Radio is planning a Mexican Riviera cruise. We're going to leave from San Diego and spend 7 days cruising down to Puerto Vallarta, Cabo San Lucas, and what's the other one? Mazatlan? And it's not going to be, lots and lots and lots of people. I think it might be limited to 20 or 30 people. And we're looking forward to this. Kathy and I are going to go. We're going to bring Molly. And it's going to be a 7-day event. So go to novamradio.com and take a look at it. And if you're a cruiser or if you have been thinking about an ocean cruise, this might be fun. This might be fun. We've got events planned. Not big involving events because it's a fun cruise, but we're going to have a meet and greet and a cocktail party and discussion night and a Q&A thing, and we're just going to hang out. This is going to be as laid back as we can make it, so we're looking forward to doing this, and I hope you'll participate. Go to novamradio.com. There's a link there, and at my website, mikemalloy.com, how to get further information from the travel agency in Phoenix that's handling this, okay? Okay, what, huh? What, yes?
And I was just going to say, we've never cruised before, so if there are people out there who are, veteran cruisers, I would love to hear about it. I just read up that they're formal nights, which means I have to wear heels and stuff. And so
there's a formal night?
I wasn't sure. So we have to dress up a couple of times, I guess, or eat in pizza, or I'm not even sure. I've never done this before, and I understand Dramamine might be involved.
I
get seasick sometimes in the bathtub, so I just...
You get scary reading Moby Dick. You get seasick reading Moby Dick, yeah.
Ever since I was pregnant, all of a sudden I've got a motion thing, so I may be spending a lot of the cruise,
That's all right.
Yeah. But also, we'll be auditioning for the role of War Czar.
Well,
so if anyone would like to come dressed as War Czar,
craziness. Sign up, join us. We're gonna have some fun. A couple of quick phone calls here, and then to Foxy the Snowman. Let's go to Ed, who's calling from Atlanta. Ed, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike.
Hey.
Hey, I just have a comment about the. You may remember. And when President Bush was governor, I was in high school.
Uh-huh.
I remember a guy in Texas, his name was James Farrier. He was tied, he was a black man walking down the street.
Oh, that's right, he was tied behind a pickup truck, yeah.
And so he was decapitated. They tried to pass a hate crime legislation, and he vetoed it.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that kind of makes me wonder, Well, he won't pass hate crimes. What does that tell people? I mean, come on. It kind of makes me wonder, it's okay to kill somebody because they're black? It's okay to kill someone because they're bad? It's okay to kill somebody because you hate somebody? Yeah. I mean, why do they have laws? To deter people? I mean, what is it going to take?
It's awful. I remember that case. It wasn't only that he was decapitated. His body was disintegrated.
Yeah. It just makes me wonder. This guy, he seems to just doesn't get it. I mean, he works for the people, not your friends, not your constituents, not your corporate buddies, the people. And what does it say in the Constitution? We, the people, not we, the corporation, not we, my contributors, not we, my constituents, not my friends, not my buddies, not my daddy's friends, not anybody else, not my friends, the people. You listen to the people. If the people want out, then they want out. They don't want in. Maybe you need to get a clue. God, what does it take to get through his head?
maybe an appearance of the Virgin Mary or one of the disciples. I don't know, Ed. Hey, listen.
I don't know, man. Because it makes you wonder.
It does. It does. Ed, I got to leave you there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. All right. Call us again. Call us again. This is unsettling on the one hand and makes perfect sense on the other. The a former British Army commander has told the BBC News, night news program, that the United States and the United Kingdom must admit defeat and stop fighting a hopeless war in Iraq. He is General Sir Michael Rose. He said, Iraqi insurgents will not give up. He said, quote, I don't excuse them for some of the terrible things they do, but I do understand why they are resisting, end quote. Now, the total number of UK troops killed in operations in Iraq stands at 147. Sir Michael Rose, General Sir Michael Rose, has written a book drawing similarities between the tactics of insurgents in Iraq and George Washington's men in the American War of Independence. He told BBC Newsnight, quote, as Lord Chatham said when he was speaking on the British presence in North America, he said, if I was an American, as I am an Englishman, as long as one Englishman remained in America on American native soil, I would never, never, never lay down my arms, end quote. He went on to say, quote, the Iraqi insurgents feel exactly the same way. He said, it is the soldiers who have been telling me from the front line that the war they have been fighting is a hopeless war, that they cannot possibly win it, and the sooner we start talking politics and not military solutions, the sooner they will come home and their lives will be preserved, end quote. This meant the UK government would have to admit defeat, he added. He said, quote, the British admitted defeat in North America, and the catastrophes that were predicted at the time never happened. The catastrophes that were predicted after Vietnam never happened. The same thing will occur after we leave Iraq, end quote. Now, when you couple that, General Sir Michael Rose telling the British people via and the rest of the world via the BBC's Newsnight that the war is over, we're hopelessly defeated. When you couple that with the Israelis demanding that Ehud Olmert leave office because of his mishandling, and again, not to challenge one way or the other, the actual invasion of Lebanon, I happen to think it was a wrong move, but Olmert apparently, through a small cadre of military people, suggested that this was the way to do it. And what happened was, in any way you look at it, if you can look at it objectively, Israel was defeated and retreated and said, okay, we're out of here. Whether they were defeated militarily or through public opinion is open to debate. And I understand all Israel had to do was drop one tactical nuke on South Lebanon. It would have been all over. But they did not do that. So the citizens of Israel have had enough of this crap. And they're demanding his resignation. The British general, Sir Michael Rose, General Sir Michael Rose, is saying, look, we've lost in Iraq. Just get out. This is the second time the Brits have lost in Iraq. The Brits have lost a couple of times in Afghanistan, too. And in this country, see, the government, the Israeli government, appointed a commission to investigate what happened. Why was the 37-day war in Lebanon such a debacle? How did it happen? And the result was, well, the Israeli people were lied to. The Israeli prime minister launched a war unprepared for the consequences or the negative PR. The Israeli military conducted itself in a manner that guaranteed that it was not going to either defeat whoever it was they were fighting in Lebanon or at least win world opinion. So the Israeli people said, okay, you had your shot, Ehud, you're out of here. Can you imagine? And that's what the commission found. The commission put all the blame where it belonged, on the Israeli leadership. Wouldn't it be wonderful if a commission could be put together here about the Bush crime family that would be just as honest as the Israelis? Wouldn't that be amazing?
They were playing at school. Yeah, 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 yeah. Before when
I've reminded the Prime Minister, the American people, Mr. Prime Minister, over the past months that it was not always a given that the United States and America would have a close relationship.
Dumb bastard. God. What? 21 past the hour. Hey, don't forget, tomorrow night, Youth Night. All night long, if the young folks can sustain it, it'll be phone calls only from people 13 through 17. And like I've mentioned before, we've done this a couple times in other gigs that I've had. This is the first time we're doing it on Nova M. And it usually turns out to be very interesting. So if you are between the ages of 13 and 17 inclusive and you want to call in tomorrow night to voice your opinion on actually about any topic, I mean, we'll probably just have a regular show. I mean, I'll have the usual stuff that I come up with every night. But it'll be kids calling in. And we ask non-kids to just hang back and listen. You know, unless it tanks. If it tanks, then we'll say, okay, that's it. Nobody, none of the young people are calling in, so let's go back to the adults. It's never worked that way, but you never know. So tomorrow night on the program, young people will be making their feelings and thoughts and attitudes and hopes and dreams and fears and all of that known, to the extent that the time allotted to each phone call allows all that to happen. But you know what I'm saying. That's tomorrow night on the Malloy program. And then next week we'll be gone. We're taking some time off. As far as substituting for me, I've heard rumors that maybe Brad Freeman, maybe Peter Werby. I don't know. But I don't think there will be any repeats, you know, and I don't think there are going to be any so-called best ofs, are there?
Well, when you talked to Peter today, did you by any chance ask him if he wanted to be War Czar? Because I know that job is still open, and okay. It's bugging me.
I'll tell you what, at some point during the show, I'm going to ask Ian Huff, our engineer back in Phoenix, if he'd like to be War Czar, since obviously it's really got your attention, hasn't it, Kathy?
Well, damn it, we need one. And obviously Bush and Petraeus and okay. Gates, I mean, they can't, and Peter okay. Pace, they're not up to the challenge, and I want a War Czar.
Yeah, I know you do. I know you do. This email comes from Athena, who, if you remember your Greek mythology, is the daughter of Zeus, the warrior goddess, partly. She had other claims to fame and notoriety, too, but this comes from Athena. The subject line is, why are right-wing men afraid of women? Dear Mike, oh, let me count the ways. There is a specific balance to this world, Mike. Mother Nature, God the Father, not that I believe in the latter, she writes. Thus far, with minor exceptions, men have been in control of the world throughout history. I think they think if women gain some control of this earth, they will lose theirs, effectively emasculating them. That shouldn't be the case, but in their tiny little minds, that's what will happen. If the right woman gains power, in a country like ours, the tide against war may turn, and the military-industrial complex will lose their hold on these little men's testicles. Woo. What woman would send other mothers' children to a war like the scandal in Iraq? Follow the money, Mike. They use their religious zealotry as a smokescreen so they can collect their disciples' money, give it to the correct political power party, and gain power. Bush's empty belief in Jesus is just another ruse. It's wicked, Mike. Just wicked. Sincerely, Athena. Yeah, I have no doubt whatsoever. I have never been around a conservative male or a Republican male. And usually included somewhere between the word conservative and Republican is the term religious. Who wasn't, and I don't care what the religion, it really doesn't matter. The ones I'm most familiar with, I've said before, Muslim, Christian, and Jew. But I have never been around men who are conservative, religious, and Republican, who are not really, in fact, terrified of the power of women. I have a healthy respect for it, but I'm not terrified of it. Yes?
I was just going to say, there's no question that if there was a woman president, a female president, there would never be another war like this.
Not necessarily true. There have been women warriors. I mean, think of Golda Meir.
I'm just saying, every 28 days, there'd be really intense negotiations, very intense negotiations.
Oh, you're awful.
But there would be no war.
There might be a war czar, though, right?
I vote for Kucinich. I want him to be my war czar.
Athena, Golda Meir, Indira Gandhi, Perel.
Joan of Arc?
Well, yeah, but look what happened to her. She wasn't a political leader. She was a warrior. She was a... And look what they did to her because she wore men's clothing. That's why they burned her at the stake. Hateful goddamn people. All right, we'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Your phone calls when we come back, I promise. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
Great hearts and great compassion about our fellow human men and women.
Oh, he's so stupid. All right, very quickly, Tony Snell, he vows to work through his cancer treatment to continue to spread the Bush crime family propaganda. Okay, we hope he recovers. We hope he actually gives some answers this time around. I'm going to miss too much cappuccino Perino, however. We wanted to bring you some of Dim Sun's speech to the general contractors yesterday, other than that one soundbite we played during the first hour, but the White House Internet's gurus scrubbed all of the best flubs out, so it's not fun anymore. Yeah. Anyway, here's Tony Snell back on the job. This reporter asks about the statement Bush made the other day that one could measure success in Iraq by an acceptable level of violence. The crack White House reporter says, Tony, do you today have a definition of what an acceptable level of violence would be in Iraq, as President Bush stated was the goal yesterday?
We're now playing the adjective game. The fact is, when you talk about an acceptable level, it is something that allows the government to exist independently. If you want to, the problem is, everybody says, oh, so you accept violence. You like violence. Violence is okay. No, it's not okay. So in abstract terms, zero violence is acceptable. On the other hand, we know well, and the president has said many times, that it is going to be a tactic of people who want to bring this government down to commit acts of violence.
What government?
Violence, unfortunately, at least for a while, is going to be a fact of Iraqi life. What we're really talking about is trying to create conditions of security so that you can have a functional democracy in Iraq,
yeah,
where people can go about their daily lives, where they have confidence in the rule of law and the people who are responsible for protecting them.
October of 2004, John Kerry said, we have to get back to the place where we were, where terrorists are not the focus of our lives, but they're a nuisance. The president said he couldn't disagree more. Cheney called this naive and dangerous and part of a pre-9/11 mindset. So does the president now have a pre-9/11 mindset?
No, the president does not have a pre-9/11 mindset. And the fact is, I'll have to go back and take a look.
At what? At what, Tony? Can you say hypocrisy? Here, try it. Hypocrisy. Bush speak good. Kerry speak bad. What did he say? Violence, unfortunately, at least for a while, it's going to be a fact of Iraqi life. Ah, and maiming, and rapes, and torture, and dead children, and dead moms. Wow. Don't we just love Bush-style democracy? Huh? Why aren't the Iraqis handing our military people candy and flowers? Why aren't they grateful for all this glorious liberation? These hypocritical sons of bitches, I'll tell you, it's just an outrage. And Tony Snow is the mouthpiece now, the mouthpiece for the most vile collection of hypocrisy and cynicism and murder in the last 30 years. There he stands. On the two-month break the Iraqi parliament is taking to deliberate the oil bill or the oil grab that they're being forced to consider, the one Bush and the oil companies shoved down their throats with the help of, 140,000 U.S. troops and an equal number of, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, private contractors. The crack White House reporter says, Tony, why aren't you commenting about the possibility that the Iraq parliament is going to take 2 months off with key legislation pending? I mean, even if they are considering this, isn't that an affront to this administration, the Bush administration? Doesn't it speak to political will at a time when people are questioning, can the Iraqi government actually meet political benchmarks? Doesn't that, though, speak to the will of the Iraqi government?
I'm aware of the news reports, but I also am aware that you've got an Iraqi government right now where we are working with them on a whole host of issues. There was some discussion this morning about the fact that you've now had the council ministers pass on to the council of representatives an oil law. And there's there is a lot of activity going on in the country. And I just think at this particular juncture, trying to
draw
broad conclusions about something that is rumored possibly to happen in 2 months is a great parlor exercise,
but it is
not a particularly useful diplomatic exercise. This is a government that's operational on a whole series of fronts.
Oh, yeah?
And again, rather than trying to leap to conclusions and to ignore the vast amount of stuff that that government is doing and the risks that they are undertaking in order to build a secure democracy, what I'd suggest is wait and see what happens.
But wait a second. Tony, are you not aware? Are you not aware that there's a conference in Egypt? A conference aimed at rescuing Iraq from the chaos and bankruptcy that your filthy employer has brought to that country. And this conference is displaying an unprecedented display of international unity. Foreign ministers from more than 50 countries, Tony, gathered in the Red Sea resort of Sharm el-Sheikh to launch a five-year plan aimed at stabilizing Iraq. Tony, are you not aware of who's there? Iran, Syria, Egypt, on and on. Huh? What are you talking about? You're aware of the news reports? Of what? When you say that this government is operational, the Maliki government is operational on a whole series of fronts, name one. Water, electricity, education, medical care, health care, streets and alleys, oil production, clean air, garbage pickup, operating morgues, police departments, army. Pick one! It's not operational, Tony, on any level.
How much worse can it be that when the parliament says, check, please, we're going to leave for a while, and we'll see you later now, because, we don't all want to be dead and stuff, so we're taking out so much for your benchmarks.
On the Pentagon shutting down emailers and bloggers, have you heard about this? It is now... where is it? Here it is. The Army, the U.S. Army, has ordered soldiers to stop posting to blogs, to stop sending personal emails without first clearing the content with a superior officer. The directive that was issued a couple of weeks ago is the sharpest restriction on troops' online activity since the start of the Iraq invasion and occupation. And it could mean the end of military blogs, according to observers. Retired paratrooper Matthew Burden, editor of The Blog War anthology, says, quote, "This is the final nail in the coffin for combat blogging. No more military bloggers writing about their experiences in the combat zone. In fact, this is the best PR the military has, its most honest voice out of the war zone, and it's being silenced." Now, for the soldiers who continue, They could get court-martialed or receive administrative, disciplinary, contractual, or criminal action against them. Active duty troops, by the way, aren't the only ones affected by this new order. Civilians working for the military, army contractors, even soldiers' families are now prohibited from blogging about George Bush's murder spree. And here it comes. This is what is at WiredNews.com. While the regulations may apply to a broad swath of people, not everyone affected can actually read the regulations. In a Kafkaesque turn, the guidelines are kept on the military's restricted Army Knowledge Online intranet. Many Army contractors and family members don't have access to that site. Even those able to get in are finding their access is blocked to the file that tells them what the rules are. Kafkaesque? Maybe. More like Catch-22 or Orwell, wouldn't you think? Now, in fairness, the U.S. military, all militaries, are always concerned about their personnel, their soldiers inadvertently letting sensitive information out. During World War II, the mail, regular snail mail sent by the troops, was read and censored. There were posters back here. Some people may remember. I don't, but I remember seeing them as an adult. What was it? Loose lips sink ships. Careless talk kills, you know, stuff like that. Military blogs can make the potential for mischief by the enemy worse. On a website, according to Wired News, on a website, anyone, including foreign intelligence agents, can stop by and look for information. So what this does, effectively, once again, we are in a situation created by this demonic bastard in the White House, George W. Bush, and now the soldiers who are over there, who are ordered to kill and who run the risk of being severely, grievously wounded or killed, cannot email back home without letting their superior officer, whatever that means. Does it mean their squad commander? Does it mean some lieutenant? Does it mean a captain? Maybe a major, lieutenant colonel? Who? Before they send the email home. Oh, my God. So, here is the question. The Pentagon has required all military bloggers to seek approval for their blogging and their email. Some bloggers in the military and conservative commentators have said that the government is shutting down their freedom of speech and only wants them to report good news.
From what we understand, that is being overreported a little bit in the following sense.
Overreported?
First, I'm not sure that is operational, that request. Number two, to the extent that they have asked, and I would refer you to the Pentagon.
Yeah, there he is.
But my understanding is that they're concerned about matters of operational security. That's normal in a time of war. There is always censorship in a time of war.
Sure.
Mainly to protect the people who are doing the fighting.
Yeah.
Similarly with emails, but there is no wholesale shutdown. Again, I'm just giving you what I know, and I would encourage you to talk to the Pentagon for further detail. But my understanding is there's no wholesale shutting down of blogs or of email. But on the other hand, there is sensitivity to the fact that you have to be careful when you're doing these things.
What things?
Not to jeopardize yourself, your colleagues, the operations, the Iraqis, and the overall mission.
When you say overreported, what do you mean by that?
What I'm saying is that the characterization you just gave is some people say they're being shut down.
And of course, those troops are just lying commie traitors. There's no shutdown. What are you talking about? Come on. Some troops? What are these troops? Are these some queers we let in that slipped in under the radar? Are these queers talking about this? Are these infiltrators? Huh? What do you mean? Somebody's saying that. Get out of here. There's no wholesale shutdown. And remember, the U.S. doesn't torture, and we're not interested in the Iraqi oil, and the Easter Bunny brings chocolate eggs to good white Christian kiddies all over the world. Now sit down and shut up. Can I get a real question?
Thank you.
about 8 minutes before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program in Phoenix at KPHX. Thanks to our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota. Mark Marshall, our webmaster at MikeMalloy.com, and the militant moderators at that website. And go to our message board some night if you'd like to get into a heated discussion. Catherine Bay is the executive producer of this program. Don't forget tomorrow night, Youth Night on The Malloy Show. And if the spirit moves you, please go to NovaMradio.com and sign up to be a founding member. It'll cost you a penny under $10 a month or $100 a year. And it will mean a lot to the continuation of this network. I'm just left with one thing tonight that I just can't seem to understand. Of course, this is not something new. I've wondered about this for years now. How can Christians, people who claim to be followers of Christ, how can they oppose hate crimes legislation? This is where it really starts to break down for me. This is one of those areas of totally incomprehensible, quote, logic, end quote, that leaves me utterly convinced that religion is nothing but a sewer, and that if you are willing to go into it, you are going to become covered with slime. Someone who says they are a Christian, who, I mean, didn't Jesus say he came to change the law? The law was what you find in these strange recordings of the Hebrews, Leviticus and Deuteronomy and all these books of the law, where, you know, if your children disrespect you, take them into the yard and murder them. And a man shall not lay with a man like he lays with a woman. Didn't Jesus come and say, hey, this is nonsense? There's not that much recorded that he actually said, maybe because he never existed, maybe because there was no one there, like Socrates had Plato to write it all down. I have no idea, but I do know this, because I was brought up in that faith, that Jesus Christ never said anything about gays. Never. And when you stop and think about it, 13 men wandering around the Middle East, hanging out together for the few years that the historical Jesus ministered and offered up his version of the truth. 13 guys hanging out together. Statistically, you know, two of them were gay. I cannot get my mind around the idea that Christians will not only oppose hate crimes legislation, but some freak like Dobson will say that if you support it and then slink off and read your Bible looking for some sort of justification, that you then will be guilty of thought crime. And I mean, all you have to do is listen to Dobson for one program to understand that this evil son of a bitch is one of the people that Orwell had in mind when he coined the term thought crime. Dr. James Dobson, like Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Yeah, they're doctors, all right. Very quickly, Rocky Mountain Mary.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call tonight. At this point, I think you've covered just about every inch available in my space that resides in my head to handle.
Yeah.
Not so much through, always through you, but most especially tonight to the listeners. I think I've heard one theme of sort of a major depression that comes out that I think all of us who dwell in this Bush, post-Bush world, I don't know, maybe it needs its own post-Bush PTSD syndrome named or whatever. I just want to reassure all of you, because we all need that from time to time. We are not the ones that are insane. The ones that are insane are the ones that are running the government.
Right, they are. And
please,
what I'm,
this is what we need to act on.
And what I'm afraid of is they're going to infect us all.
You've got to be declared insane.
Mary, we're out of time. I'll tell you what, if you call back, well, you can't call back tomorrow to be youth night, but we'll talk again. I've got to leave it there. Thanks, Rocky Mountain Mary. I'll see you all tomorrow night. Take care, all right? Thanks for participating. Watch your back and keep it lit.